listening to the Union Edge, Lakers Talk Radio. For more information about the show, go to theunionedge.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Belanger from Radio Labor, reporting for the Union Edge. This is a Radio Labor special report. Swaziland is a small country in southern Africa. Its 1.2 million people are ruled by the continent's last absolute monarch, King Mswati III. The king does not like opposition. He especially does not like the labor unions that are trying to represent the country's workers amongst the world's poorest. In the past couple of weeks, Swazi police have violently broken up meetings of the Trade Union Congress of Swaziland, TUKUSWA. I talked to Vincent Mawana, the Secretary General of TUKUSWA, about the situation in the country. Mr. Mawana was on a tour of the UK organized by the respected NGO Action for Southern Africa, AXA. I asked him why the police were breaking up the meetings of his organization.
The Swaziland police, probably with orders from their superiors, do not want us to get on with our business of representing worker interests in terms of their economic, social, and political concerns.
What are those concerns? What issues is TUKUSWA addressing?
We want to be dealing with issues like strengthening the organizations, the trade unions, so that they are able to balance the power of the employers. But also, we want to be able to strengthen them so that they are able to even challenge the manner in which Swaziland is governed. For instance, in the manner in which our taxpayers' money is allocated through the budget, because there isn't any other powerful organization to be able to do that other than labor.
TUKUSWA was created in 2012 by the merger of two existing labor federations and was registered by the government. But a year later, the government deregistered TUKUSWA. Why? What happened?
Our belief is that the government of Swaziland is not comfortable with a very big organization that it cannot be able to control. And with the merger of the two labor centers, it was bringing unity to the workers. And the workers being united are one group that can be able to challenge even the excesses of the government. And the government used a technicality that they suddenly woke up to say that the labor relations did not allow for the registration of federations. Therefore, the registration of TUKUSWA was a mistake.
Swaziland is almost completely surrounded by South Africa, except for a small border with Mozambique. Has the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, been helping TUKUSWA?
COSATU has been helping us in terms of giving training and also being able to take up the issues that we have regionally and even internationally, assisting us also in that regard. And she has also been able to highlight the concerns that we have in Swaziland and the problems we have of operating within South Africa.
Have COSATU representatives been allowed into the country to help support TUKUSWA?
They have been allowed all along, but surprisingly, 2 weeks back when the police were made aware that COSATU was going to be visiting us, they came out to say that for us to host COSATU, that would be in violation of the Suppression of Terrorism Act. Now, that is how bad it has become in Swaziland.
Is the Swazi government saying that COSATU is a terrorist organization?
Well, we think that they're simply trying to intimidate us and to make it appear to the public that we are supporting terrorist organizations. But we are confident that the Swazi public is aware that the police were being at their intimidating best.
What can labor unions and their members around the world do to help TUKUSWA?
We would hope that they will be able to raise the concerns of this violation of worker rights in Swaziland through their governments, so that their governments, whether diplomatic channels or in the organizations, the multilateral organizations that are there, they can be able to raise these concerns. For instance, in the Commonwealth, we believe that trade unions can be able to have their governments raise it through the relevant structures of the Commonwealth, SADC, or the African Union, as they do in the ILO.
And that's it. International labor news you can use. Radio Labor's daily newscasts are available on its website, Facebook, iTunes, union websites, mobile phones, and community radio stations. locations. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm John Kerr. On Fox News' The O'Reilly Factor, host Bill O'Reilly discussed President Obama's foreign policy record with Democratic strategist Jessica Ehrlich.
There isn't anything you could, not one accomplishment, not one, Jessica, and if you have one, I want to hear it right now, of President Obama's foreign policy, which includes Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. There's nothing to point to, is there? Not one accomplishment
well,
in 6 years
Osama
overseas.
Bin Laden. Osama bin Laden.
That had,
not,
he had nothing to do with that. That was U.S. intel and the Navy SEALs taking him out. He just said, do it.
Well, it happened under his watch.
So what?
It happened under his watch.
All right, fine. So if that's what he's got and after 6 years, that's dismal.
But in the days following the raid, O'Reilly repeatedly gave Obama credit for ordering the attack on the O'Reilly Factor.
There's no question Mr. Obama did the right thing, the gutsy thing, in the bin Laden raid.
For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. That is for sure. Joining me now by phone, we've got Bill Londrigan, president of Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. Thanks.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Always a pleasure. Your state legislature has got 2 days left, and after that, they can't do any harm until next year, right?
That's probably right. And, you know, we're here for tonight and tomorrow, and hopefully that'll be the end of it. And we'll try to regroup here and get ready for elections as they come up here for governor and our constitutional officers here in November and focus on that after the session. So we certainly were not enamored with the results here by any stretch, but in at least two major cases, Charles, we were able to, stop our opponents in defeating right to work as well as defeating the repeal of prevailing wage here in Kentucky. And we think that's really great for working people here. And it shows that, regardless of the rhetoric and the all the great statements by the other side about how great these things are, the legislators did not buy it, and the people of Kentucky don't buy it either. So, that it bodes well as far as us not having to deal with those issues here at the state level. But, of course, as we know, they're out there beating on the doors of the counties here on the right to work issue. And, again, we've been totally engaged in pushing that back. And it's been a very, a difficult struggle. But I think we're making progress. The other side is, slowing down in their quest to get all these counties on board. And little by little, we've been, ratcheting up our response. And we've gotten a great response from so many counties that are not interested in messing with right to work for less at the county level. They've been, informed about what it means for working people, and they've also been informed about what it means legally. And as you know, we have a federal lawsuit pending on this issue in the Western District of Kentucky. And within a few months, we anticipate the judge making his ruling, and we fully anticipate him to fall down on the side of working people and against right to work and the Koch brothers and everybody else that's jumping on to try and push this agenda.
Bill, let me ask you a question. And one of the things that you've talked about over the last couple of interviews that we had with you was you've got Republican elected officials down in Kentucky saying, you know what, really, no, that's not appropriate. That's not how we do things here in Kentucky. And it seemed to me that you were catching people not only, with their partisan, oh, I'm a Republican or oh, I'm a Democrat, shield down, and you were getting real heartfelt discussions. Are you seeing them? Are you seeing that more and more?
Yes, Charles, let me tell you that when we're given the opportunity to present our case and to really talk about the facts about right to work, the facts about the law, the response has been very, very positive. In fact, last week in Oldham County, which is right up against Jefferson County in Louisville, a county that has 9 magistrates, all of them are Republicans, and a county judge who is also a Republican, they voted it down last week. They voted to table it, which essentially for us means that they're not going to take any action until the judge decides. They voted it down by 7-2 in that chamber, which really showed us that, you know, if they give us a fair chance, and they did, actually. They had a first reading a couple weeks ago, and before they had the second reading, they invited us to come in and state our position. They did not hold us to a real tight time frame. I was able to, show materials and make a presentation, answer questions, and actually had follow-up questions from a lot of the magistrates. And when we were able to really, present our case without being, held to 2 or 3 minutes, we were able to, get them to think about what they're doing and to, change their position. I think it really shows that, when the facts are out there and it's not just a partisan or a bum's rush, so to speak, to run these things through these chambers, we can win. We can beat them back. And I got to tell you, Charles, the stories that have been coming out, a lot of them in the media have not been, we'll say, positive from our perspective. Mm-hmm. And I have spoken to several reporters, and they've come on and said, "Oh, we're going to do a story about the counties that pass right to work." I said, "Oh, well, gee whiz, I think you have your story and your focus wrong. I think it's incorrect."
Yeah,
and
small minority. Said, the counties.
Well, 11 out of 120, and they've been working on this since mid-December of 2014, and they promised that they were going to get 30 of them by the end of January. Here we are running up against April, and they've got 11. We have touched base and talked to county judges and magistrates across Kentucky, and right now we can tally about 70 counties that have said no. They have absolutely said that they will not go in that direction. They will not bring up a right-to-work ordinance. And so that's the vast majority of them, and we're moving on to the others as well. We're touching base with as many as we can. And when we get the chance to make our case, they've been falling down on our side.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful thing, Bill. And not only you, but everybody else has been out there working on it, educating the public and getting people just to, take that deep breath. I think, you have managed, and everybody else in Kentucky that's working on this, have managed to get the vast majority of the population of Kentucky into that sweet spot. They're not Republican. They're not Democrat on this issue. They're, they're Kentuckian. And they understand what fair play is. They understand that, if you do a job for somebody, you should expect to be compensated for that fairly. Have you asked any of these attorneys that are proposing right to work? Are you willing to work for free?
Well, we've asked attorneys, the county attorneys, Charles, play a pretty significant role in this whole process. And, it's their job to inform their particular county whether or not something is legal or illegal. And when they are doing it honestly and fairly, they've been citing that it's illegal. And in Oldham County, the county attorney was very specific and very concise, we'll say, with his comments about it. And he told the county fiscal court, he said, "Hey, this is illegal from both the federal and the state level." And that's doing his job, because when you read the law, you read the precedent, you read the authorities that have come down on this, there's almost no question that this is an illegal approach. And, unfortunately, Charles, others are, in other states like Illinois, we now have that governor over there trying to push this crazy right-wing agenda, and he's proposing right-to-work zones and stuff like that. And clearly this is falls outside the law. It falls outside the National Labor Relations Act. And I think when Kentucky when the judge here rules against it, I think it's going to have an impact in Illinois as well. So I think, things are you know, moving along in a direction I think is generally positive. The, you know, so-called momentum that they, you know, got from starting this thing out without telling anybody and keeping it a secret and all that stuff has fallen by the wayside. And I think it's having a great effect on our membership. They've been showing up at these county fiscal court meetings in droves. In Oldham County, the chamber was packed. In Northern Kentucky, in Boone County last week, where they actually did pass it, they you know, failed to listen to our pleas, and the county attorney sat there like a bump on the log and failed to do his duty and didn't even talk about, you know, whether it was illegal or legal. Just let it go. And, you know, we think that's a total breach of his responsibility. And we and as a result, they voted for it. Again, the chambers were packed. It was interesting, Charles, because when we
Hold that story, because we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this. And we're going to keep educating people, okay?
Sure.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Ed, please call home. Edward Snowden, that is. Come quickly. Your country needs you. Once again, the American people are being victimized by a hush-hush blanket of official secrecy. This time, it's not about wholesale spying on us by our government, but a wholesale assault on our jobs, environment, health, and even our people's sovereignty by a cabal of global corporations and the Obama administration. Their weapon is a scheme hidden inside a scam called TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The scam is their claim that TPP is nothing but another free trade deal, albeit a whopper that ties our economy to Brunei, Vietnam, and nine other nations around the Pacific Rim. But of the 29 chapters in this deal, only five are about tariffs and other trade matters. The real deal is in the 24 other chapters that create a supranational scheme of secretive tribunals that corporations from any TPP nation can use to challenge and overturn our local, state, and national laws. All a corporate power has to do to win in these closed tribunal proceedings is to show that any particular law or regulation might reduce its future profits. This enthrones a global corporate oligarchy over us. Yet it's been negotiated by the 12 countries in strict secrecy. Even members of Congress have been shut out, but some 500 corporate executives have been allowed inside to shape the partnership. Now that Obama and his corporate team are ready to ram it through Congress, he arranged a briefing to woo House Democrats. But he classified it as a secret session, meaning the lawmakers can't tell the people anything they learn. This is Jim Hightower saying, Holy Thomas Paine! Obama is hiding his oligarchic scheme from us because he knows we would overwhelmingly oppose it. It's government by sucker punch, and it's cowardly.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
Sisters and brothers, are you buried in paperwork? UnionTrack is a software platform that streamlines your administrative work so you can spend less time chasing databases and more time taking care of your members. UnionTrack was created to streamline your day-to-day operations, allowing you to focus on organizing, training, and advocating for working families. More information is available at UnionTrack.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now,
one in six Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our coworkers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. I am joined right now by Bill Lonergan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Bill, you know, before the break, you were relaying some of the experiences that you were having with people as you were going through the process of explaining, number one, right to work for less is a fraud that's perpetrated against working people. Those who are part of the idea or the push to bring it into a community should be ashamed of themselves. They're accomplices in this fraud. And third, you know, quite honestly, once you explain this to people, what it's really all about, all across the spectrum, you get people believing you and passing on their thoughts.
Well, that's exactly right. And it just goes to show, Charles, that, you know, almost everything that the other side claims about right to work is a fraud. It's untrue. You know, it runs the gamut from all this nonsense about individual rights and freedom to economic development. And, you know, that's one of their big things they've been tossing in here, which is all about, you know, we'd be getting all these jobs in here if we were right to work, and we're losing all these jobs, yeah, because we're not. And Charles, just yesterday, they had a big announcement here in Kentucky. They, you know, have another automobile supplier come in the state, a foreign corporation. Obviously, the right-to-work issue had no bearing whatsoever on their decision, and that's kind of the way it's been as far as almost all of these corporations. You know, the ones that are, you know, just interested in going to a right-to-work state, well, you know, we got problems with them. We don't think that that's a good, you know, economic development approach. And basically, it just shows you that their interest is to get low-wage workers and to get workers that are not going to have a union to represent them. And, heck, if they don't want to come to Kentucky, good. Let them go to someplace else. And, you know, that's the position we've taken. And, you know, Kentucky has gotten so many, you know, awards and recognitions for the, you know, economic development efforts that they've put forth. You know, right now we're the third largest automobile producer in the country, Charles, and we've got, you know, a huge automobile industry with suppliers coming in all the time. And it's clear that, you know, their agenda isn't just related to whether or not we're right to work or not.
Bill, you know, and one of the other things that surprised me when I was down there, you told me that the bourbon farms, so to speak, the bourbon distilleries, they're all unionized with USCW, right?
Yeah, it's almost all of them, except for maybe one or two. You know, all the big ones, whether it's Four Roses or you know, Buffalo Trace, you know, any number of these Brown-Forman products. There's so many of these bourbons that are out here that they're, you know, they're all union made, except for one or two. And, you know, apparently that doesn't have any impact on their ability to be profitable either, Charles.
Right.
They've, you know, been making enormous amounts of money selling bourbon all over the world now. It's got some sort of cachet to it. And the relations with the producers, the distillers, and the union has been excellent. There's, you know, very, very little problem whatsoever labor-wise in the distilleries across the state. And, you know, it just goes to show you that when they have a unionized workforce in their plants, they are extremely profitable, that they, you know, aren't, you know, at a disadvantage in any way. And I think it goes to show you that, you know, a mature type view of labor relations is one that, you know, respects the rights of workers to organize if they desire and to engage them in collective bargaining in a fair way and have agreements that protect the workers as well as the company and give them the opportunity to prosper. It's a two-way street, and you know, that's the nature of the collective bargaining process, and why the anti-union element is so dead set on workers having a voice on the job is really beyond me. You know, it just doesn't ring true as far as what actually happens in reality. And, you know, Charles, it was some of these big corporations that employ, you know, hundreds or thousands of people, collective bargaining is a plus for them. they have the opportunity to meet and discuss issues with the union that represents the workers themselves who are on bargaining committees, reach agreements that are fair to both sides, give workers a voice on the job, make sure that their wages are fair, they got good benefits, retirement, health care, and, you know, it doesn't seem to... you know, be that such a negative that the other side continues to try and make it. And, you know, some of these big employers will tell you, wow, I'm glad we got a union here because we know who to talk to. We have a process and a procedure that makes it a very effective for them to run a large-scale organization.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the other things is having a union in place is less costly for the organization if for some reason they make a mistake. You know, if we're talking about something like a health and safety issue and somebody, God forbid, gets hurt, it goes through the union. It doesn't go through the courts.
Exactly. And it's like you say, a process that is efficient, you know, to adjudicate issues on the job and to make sure that workers are getting a fair say and that the company is also, you know, having their opportunity to, you know, have their say as well. And I think it's a two-way street. And it's unfortunate that folks have taken such a negative view of all the things that we do in collective bargaining. And it just undermines, you know, they just try to undermine our position, try to undermine our, you know, public, I will say, opinion against us. And they toss around this right to work issue as if it's some sort of, you know, holy grail that's going to all of a sudden, you know, allow them to, you know, make extraordinary profits when, you know, the opposite's actually true.
Yeah. I hear you, Bill, and it's an important thing that everybody has to come to an understanding about. And the quicker that we get, the quicker that we get people to come to an understanding about this, the better off we're all going to be. Hey, Bill, we got about 2-3 minutes left. Any other things that we should be aware of going on in Kentucky?
Well, you know, again. With the legislative session coming to an end and us starting to focus on our political races, you know, for a governor here, which is a huge deal. And, you know, we're totally committed to try and elect the current attorney general, whose name is Jack Conway. He is a wonderful attorney general right now, and we think he'll be a great governor, Charles, and he has, you know, stood with us on this issue. He has issued an attorney general's opinion that supports the right to workers to organize and is opposed to right to work. He's also filed a friend of the court amicus brief in the federal lawsuit on our behalf as well. So that's something that we're going to start shifting into as soon as the session's over, start working on our political campaigns to try to make sure we elect a governor that's going to stand with working families, and that'll help us going forward.
And that's an important thing. And, you know, one of the things, you know, when you talk about this kind of thing, you're going to have people out on the ground. You're going to have people knocking on doors. Members can contribute to their union PACs. But despite what some people want to tell you, union dues are not used for political action.
Precisely. And I think that is another one of the, you know, falsehoods that have been put forth by our opponents, Charles. It's over and over again. Oh, they take those union dues, that union money from them workers without their consent, and then they spend it on these politicians that are against, you know, the interest of the workers. And, you know, that is a total falsehood, as you know, because workers can only be required to voluntarily contribute money to those PAC funds. And, you know, if they don't want to contribute it, they're very well free not to. And it's just another part of the whole charade. It's another part of the lie that's put forth about right to work and what we do with workers and union members. And certainly members are not coerced in any way. They're given the fair opportunity to participate if they want to. And, you know, again, if they don't want to be a full union member as well, they can only be required to pay the fair share fee, which is determined by how much a union has to pay to, you know, collectively bargain and process grievances. And, you know, there's no compulsory unionism. There's no forced political contributions. But, you know, our opponents continue. They just continue to, you know, make these false claims over and over again, Charles. It's very frustrating. But again, we're going to go out and continue pushing back on that and try to inform people of the facts.
Absolutely right, brother. And listen, Bill, we got to get going. We appreciate you being with us today. How do we find the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
Hey, you can catch us on our Facebook page, Charles, at AFL-CIOKY.
There you go, Bill. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you, Charles.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler joined fast food workers in the fight for 15 at a protest at a Chicago-area McDonald's over the weekend. Shuler was there for the AFL-CIO's Next Up Young Workers Conference.
Well, we have, I think, about 400 young people out here on the streets in front of McDonald's to really talk about the inequality that we're facing in our country and the fact that we need to fight for good jobs and make sure that no matter what sector you're working in, no matter what job you have, that you have dignity and respect and you deserve to be paid a decent wage.
Little solidarity there from the Union Edge for that audio. Andrew Martin is the kind of young teacher that the future depends on. The 28-year-old teaches at James Madison Academic Campus in Milwaukee. Education in Wisconsin today is not the same public education system it was when he decided that this would be his career. But like most who enter public education, he says he's not in it for wealth and glory. He's a teacher to provide the very best public education possible for generations of kids increasingly beset by poverty and an array of socioeconomic problems that impact their learning. That's why he opposes more cuts to Wisconsin's public education system currently being considered at the state capitol. Martin says Milwaukee will take significant cuts under the proposed budget.
The budget actually attacks Milwaukee and the Milwaukee public schools in a lot of different ways. The $127 million cut in per pupil funding is about $12 million to MPS itself. And that's going to directly affect our classroom and class sizes and course offerings.
Martin is opposing the cuts and plans to speak out against them at state budget hearings underway in Madison. But he says his stance and the position many Wisconsin educators are taking on the budget cuts isn't about being against something.
This really isn't teachers and the education establishment trying to be anti. We're really trying to be proactive and really shine a light on what we truly see the needs are for our students. Those of us that are in education are not in it to have glory and make millions of dollars. We understand these things, but once you're actually in the fight and you see where our students are at and you realize just what the cuts that are coming down and that have come down from the state are going to do and continue doing, you realize that you do have to start speaking up and start taking a stand.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Join us April 13th in Washington, D.C. at the conference where jobs and the environment meet. The Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference features dynamic speakers, informative workshops, and a chance to engage with other labor, environmental, business, and civic leaders. Energize America. Repair and update our energy systems. Reduce pollution and create quality jobs. April 13th in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.greenjobsconference.org. That's www.greenjobsconference.org.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
7,000 high school students drop out every school day. If you stack their desks one atop the other, it's a pile more than 17,000 feet high. That's 12 Empire State Buildings. But what's truly scary is that another stack is going up tomorrow. We can keep students in school. Visit boostup.org and take the first step. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad, how do you throw a curveball?
How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Josh Groban. One in six Americans don't know where their next meal will come from. These are our neighbors, friends, and coworkers. There's just no sugarcoating it. These people need our help. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger to find out how you can make a difference. I'm Josh Groban, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate that. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in The Union Edge. And we appreciate that very much. Join us now from Colorado, Denver, Colorado. We have Linda Merrick of 925. Linda, welcome back.
Thanks, Charles. Great to be back.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Just very briefly, there's some legislation that's out there talking about sick days off paid.
Yep.
I like that idea.
Sure. So there are actually a couple of bills that have been introduced in the past few weeks in the Congress that would make it easier for people to both work and support and protect their families. So at 9 to 5, we believe that nobody should ever have to risk their paycheck or their job to care for an ill family member. And likewise, nobody should have to risk their own health or a family member's health to keep a job. So last month, Senator Patty Murray from Washington and Representative Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut reintroduced the Healthy Families Act, which would provide the right for workers to earn paid sick days on their jobs, basically to cover those kinds of routine illnesses, which are often contagious illnesses, that come up either for themselves or for their family members.
Okay. Linda, let me stop you there for a second. A couple of things. Number one, paid sick leave. I can hear it right now. Oh no, this is going to, dogs and cats are going to live together. This is going to ruin all businesses in the United States, and it's a communist plot. Okay, now that we've established all those things, my next thought is let's talk about restaurant workers. Okay, generally speaking, since they get paid $2.83 an hour. They don't get sick days. They don't get paid sick days. And if I'm in a restaurant and you're coming to work because you're ill, you have the walking crud, and I get sick because I get it from you, I'm not saying you're not a nice person, but if I get it from you, I'm not going to be happy. And I'm not going to go back to that restaurant again.
I would imagine that that's true. So the reality for restaurant workers is actually, Charles, you gave them a raise. The federal minimum wage for tipped workers is only $2.13 right now. And you're right that over 80% of those workers don't have access to even one paid sick day for their own health, much less to care for an ill family member. But the reality is that now there are 3 states and 20 cities that have passed paid sick days laws. So we have a lot of experience with this. And those laws have been good not only for employees and their families, but also for businesses. the studies of paid sick days laws that have passed in San Francisco and Seattle have shown no negative impact on local economies. And actually, in both of those cities, economic growth has been stronger in those cities than it has in neighboring cities that did not have an earned sick time protection.
See, I told you it was bad for business. Yeah, you know, it's incredible to me that the naysayers are out there. It doesn't matter. Look, folks, if you take care of your people are going to take care of the job, okay? No ands, ifs, or buts about it. Look, if the military in the United States have been doing it for 250 years, you know what? The private sector, y'all can catch on too. I'm just saying. Take care of your people. All right, so that's one of them. What's the other legislation?
So the other one is called the Family Act. It's family and medical insurance leave. And basically, it addresses the same kinds of situations that would be addressed by the Family and Medical Leave Act. So more serious, longer-term illnesses and childbirth and adoption as well. You know, because the reality is that at some point, nearly everybody needs time away from the workplace to either recover from a serious illness or to care for a sick family member or a new child. And yet the majority of workers in the United States can't take the time that they need without risking their jobs or economic security.
Right.
Only 13% of the workforce has access to paid family and medical leave through their employment. And if you look again, you know, we're talking about restaurant workers and other low wage work categories, less than 5% of the lowest wage workers have access to paid leave on their job.
Right, right. And you know, Linda, I'm gonna boil this back down, okay? And we've got just a little bit of time left. And I want to say this. Look, if you want the kind of employees out there that are part of the family, that are going to walk over hot coals for you and do all those wonderful things that invested employees can do, invest in your employees, okay? It's not rocket science, folks. It's not. I mean, if you take care of your people, they're going to take care of the job. And this is, you know, imagine that single mom who knows that if, God forbid, the kid gets sick, she can stay at home and take care of the kid. That creates fierce loyalty. Linda, we're coming towards the end of it. I know you got a couple of things to say, but don't forget, let us know how we can find you.
Okay, you can. People can find out more about 9 to 5 at our website, 9to5.org. We're a national membership organization of women who work in low-wage jobs and who are speaking out and taking action to improve policies related to workplace fairness, equal opportunity, and economic security. So please check us out and join us.
Absolutely. And Linda, thank you very much for being with us today. We always appreciate you having us with you, or you with us. And we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks for the opportunity, Charles. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Linda. That was Linda Merrick of 9 to 5. Great people, great organizations. Folks, go take a look and see what they're all about. Meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
This is Ryan Tedder from One Republic. The beat of our new song, Feel Again, was created with heartbeats of children in need. Find out how it can help frontline health workers save millions of children at everybeatmatters.org.
Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families just like yours.
Sisters and brothers, are you buried in paperwork? UnionTrack is a software platform that streamlines your administrative work so you can spend less time chasing databases and more time taking care of your members. UnionTrack was created to streamline your day-to-day operations, allowing you to focus on organizing, training, and advocating for working families. More information is available at uniontrack.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our coworkers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Well, I appreciate you being with us today. That is for sure. Joining us now from Washington, D.C., Chief Legislative Person for the AFL-CIO, we've got Bill Samuel. Bill, welcome back to Union Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Always a pleasure. You know, every day, you're 25 years old and you got gray hair from all this. Like, no.
25 years old. Yeah. Plus 30-some, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you know, a lot of stuff going on out there. We were just talking with Linda Merrick of 9 to 5, talking about some of the good, positive legislation that's potentially out there for paid sick days and paid Family Medical Leave Act and all this kind of other stuff. But sometimes the legislation isn't so good. How do we keep an eye on it? How do we find out what you're flagging and how can we help?
Yeah, well, it is important to stay connected to what's going on here because there are a lot of good proposals out there like paid sick days and family paid medical leave, like your previous guest was talking about. But, you know, with the Republicans in control of the House and the Senate agenda, most of those positive reforms aren't making it to the floor of either the House or the Senate. They get bottled up as soon as they're introduced. So much of what they're doing is potentially very harmful. We're fighting over proposals to give the president fast-track trade authority, which could be a major problem. You know, they've bottled up immigration reform. They're considering a budget this week, which would slash funding for all kinds of important programs, cut tax rates for big corporations and the wealthy, cut food stamps. So there's a lot of potentially very harmful things out there on the horizon, and that's unfortunately what we're spending most of our time doing in Washington.
Bill, as chief legislative person for the AFL-CIO, the person that keeps an eye on what's going on and advises not only President Trumka and all the international union presidents, but you guys, you have ways, means, and methods of getting the word out to us.
How can we find out about this stuff? Can we go to the website? Can we get on a mailing list?
Yeah, I think the best way probably is our website, aflco.org, and we do have a legislative section on that, and that has up-to-date scheduling of what's going on in Congress and committees and on the floor. It has our most recent communications to the Hill, so whenever we think is important and we're writing a letter, including maybe a fact sheet or just the basic facts about why we oppose or support a bill, that's all put up there the day we send those letters in the legislative section. And then, of course, we all follow other blogs. The AFL-CIO has its own blog, which is also you can find at our website. And then just the basic news. You know, most websites now have up to the minute news, what's going on in Washington. And of course, there are a lot of liberal websites: Huffington Post, Talking Points, Memo. There's a lot of access 24/7 online for information.
After we find out the information and find out some of the things that you're working on, what is the best way that we can help you in the field? How can we make your life in Washington, D.C. just a little bit easier and get those elected officials on both sides of the aisle?
It's not about making my life easier. It's about making the chances of winning these fights better. And so we don't have a chance of winning, either protecting these long fought gains like the 40-hour week and minimum wage and the things that Republicans might try to roll back over these next couple of years, or passing positive things like we talked about earlier, is the work that rank and file union members, their family members, working class citizens who aren't in unions, what the work they do back home when their legislators are at home or they're in Washington, but they're reading the mail and getting phone calls from their constituents. It's that grassroots pressure which is most important. I'm not just to give you an example, where, as I said, we're in this fight over trade. We seem to have these fights every 4 or 5 years. This is over a major trade agreement that President Obama wants to submit to Congress, which would cover 12 Asian countries. We think it could be devastating for the U.S. economy, for manufacturing particularly. So we've got an active campaign in just about every congressional district to make sure those representatives and the senators in those states are willing to stand up and say that this we're not with the president on this trade deal. We're with the president on a lot of things. We support the president on much of what he's doing, but not on this particular proposal. And so we have a very active campaign in the districts and in the states, which involves visits, sometimes demonstrations, having folks from local communities go to town hall meetings when the legislators show up in public for events, letters to the editor, all those sort of traditional lobbying tools that we use to mobilize grassroots activists and local leaders to register their feelings with a member of Congress.
There you go. Bill, we got about 20 seconds left. Any final words for us today?
Well, I would just say there's a lot at stake. I say that a lot, but, the legislature has a lot of power, and fortunately we have a president who we don't think will let much get by. He won't sign bills that are damaging, again, with the exception of this trade deal, which he's actually promoting. So we have the president as a backstop, but Congress can do a lot of damage. You know, what we can win at the bargaining table, we can lose the ballot box. That's actually a famous quote from Walter Ruther, president of the UAW. What we win at the bargaining table, we can lose at the ballot box. Meaning legislators can take away things that we've won in bargaining or just laws that we won in a prior generation. They can change in an instant. Like I said, they'd like to roll back the 40-hour week. They'd like to eliminate the minimum wage. There are a lot of things that they can do. They'd like to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They'd like to make it so the president can't move ahead with his very common sense immigration reforms, which he's doing with using his executive authority. He doesn't need to go to Congress to do so. There's a lot at stake, and I would just say that people should stay connected to their legislators, follow us online so they know what's going on, and weigh in when they think it's important.
Absolutely. Bill, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small.
For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
You must be
your fairy godmother.
Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important, especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size to make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Hop in, dear.
Thank you.
For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the 5 signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that is for sure. I'm going to try and answer a question that is getting ready to come up, and I think everybody is going to enjoy this. Now, as many of you know, I'm a former immigration enforcement officer. I was an inspector. I was trained specifically to enforce the Immigration Naturalization Act. And long story short, there are two ways that you can derive citizenship other than naturalization. You can be born to U.S. parents. Sometimes it was both parents. Sometimes it was one parent. Sometimes it was one of the parents, i.e. father or mother. But there are multitudes of ways there. Or you can be born in the contiguous U.S. as a country. That would be the 50 states. Now, the interesting question is going to be for the crazy guy trying to get in the White House. Oh. Well, okay. I don't know if he's really crazy, but he's trying to get into the White House. Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz's father is a Cuban national, was at the time a Cuban national, not a U.S. citizen. That is my understanding. I could be wrong, but I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you my understanding about this. Ted Cruz was born in Canada. Not in the United States, in Canada. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. If he wants to tell me he was born in the United States, okay. And I believe that his mother may or may not have been an American citizen. Ted Cruz's mother and Ted Cruz's father were not U.S. military members serving overseas. They were not members of the State Department serving overseas in official capacity. They were civilians working on oil At this point in time, I believe that Ted Cruz is a citizen of the United States. I do not believe that he is eligible to be president. More to follow. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.